All right, we're just hearing a little of Drunken Prayer here in the background. And it's a beautiful, just an overall beautiful record from Cordelia, from and the name of the new record is Cordelia Elsewhere. And it's really, really a beautiful thing and very moving and just some great songwriting. We're lucky enough right now to have the central character from Drunken Prayer with us on the air right now, Mr. Morgan Gear. Morgan, welcome to Finn's Revolution on WUSB Stony Brook.
It's a pleasure to be on your show. I was in Stony Brook physically. It's beautiful up there.
It is. Where are you?
I'm in Asheville, North Carolina.
Well, that's listen. If you're going to be somewhere this time of year, that's a nice place to be.
It's not too bad. Yeah.
Yeah. Weather-wise, it's in New York. You know, it's a different season every day. We never know what we're going out to. So yeah.
I'll be playing in New York or New York City anyway.
Yeah.
Next month, about four or five shows. So.
Oh, so we'll get to that. Yeah, let's talk sure. that because we'll absolutely be promoting the hell out of that, as they say. So that'll be very exciting. All right, so tell us a little about your musical history and how, because this is your first time on my show, and and I'm very excited. I love this record. I've been listening to it. I usually take the train out from New York City to my show in Queens here in Stony Brook here, and I've been listening to this thing incessantly. I keep coming back to it, and
really,
yeah, and it's a beautiful thing, and it's very moving record. It's very earthy? Is that a good word? I don't know. Is that a good word?
I think it is.
Yeah, I think it is too. And it's very descriptive of what you do. It's very evocative. Well, you know, now that I know you're down in the Carolinas there, there's something to all this, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, as far as like where the music comes from and the kind of direction it's taken, it's all informed a lot by my family is multi-generational musicians from as far back as anybody knows, and I looked up to my grandfather, and he was a jazz musician up until the day he died, and my mother was a folk singer, and so music in my family was always an honorable pursuit. It was never something to be kind of at best off as a hobby or something. So it's in my family, the better musician you were, the more kind of the place of a better place at the table you would sit at.
That's fantastic.
And they're all pretty much Irish Catholic from Mobile, Alabama, down the Gulf Coast, and so that's probably a lot of where the kind of theological bent comes from in a lot of my songs.
Yeah, I was going to bring that part up too.
I'm a fan of old gospel songs too.
Sure.
Just in general, there's something about all that fire and brimstone. Get the blood flowing.
That's right, and it's that warmth of the South very much. So, is Asheville where you grew up?
Yeah. Roughly, you know, I moved around a lot. I've lived in almost every part of the country. I was born in San Francisco.
Okay.
And my parents immediately split up after that. My dad stayed in the West, and so we ended up moving back down to where most of my mom's family is, which is between New Orleans and Baton Rouge and Mobile.
Okay.
And so we were living in New Orleans after being born in San Francisco. They also lived on a little kind of commune in Oregon. But we lived everywhere. We lived in Pittsburgh, Western Massachusetts, and kind of landed in Asheville mainly for the job. I guess you'd have to ask my mom about that. But so this is I've lived here the longest, but it's hard to call one place home when you moved around as much as I have. You know what I mean? Like, I've never really have put down roots anywhere. I've just been here the longest.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It's just, your sound is evocative of, kind of place, but also a little rootless, and so that all makes sense.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, a friend of mine who's also a writer brought that up, and I'd never really thought about it because he was kind of fishing around with me for things to write about, and he kept landing on it. He's like, "You've lived so many different places," and I'm like, "Well, okay, that's not that interesting to me." the traveling part, but I started to see, like, you know, it does kind of inform how, because I've loved all the places we've lived too, in a lot of ways. Like, I loved living in Pittsburgh when I was a little kid. Absolutely loved it, and I go back as much as I can. And so I think there's a common thread now, having played around the world with like Freakwater and the Hanson family and stuff. You see this thread of just humanity. Everybody's just trying to keep the lights on and pay the bills, and so you start to see a lot more similarities in people than you see differences in regionalities, and then it's just down to accent and local culture after that, you know.
Yeah. And you just mentioned the Hanson family, who've been on the show several times, and
lucky you, they're the best.
Huge fans of Brett and Rennie, and they are the best, and such a vision of performance, you know, and they have it.
Yeah, it was getting to go on tour with them was a class in how to be a musician in the modern day. You kind of get away with it without going insane. So that was a real learning experience. Not to mention, just, you know, I had to keep pinching myself. Them and Freakwater, I was fans of sure. both of them beforehand.
Yeah,
I just had some near panic attack moments where I was like, "What am I doing?" with both of them. So it's been an amazing journey for sure.
Yeah, and it's great when somebody when you're associated with somebody like that, you know, especially when you're. You know, they're you know, doing these weirdo gigs where they do them and all these things.
It's given me it's given me a lot of focus, having kind of seen which way the wind is blowing, you know, and I have always felt kind of rootless. And it's not necessarily a bad or necessarily a melancholy thing, but I think it has spilled over into my musical life. To where I don't feel particularly beholden to any one place, and if my biggest self-criticism is that I don't feel kind of insulated enough and like a sense of place to have a consistent, like, this is like when the Hanson family are able to pull this thing off where they always sound the same and they always sound different. It's always surprising too. So it's a great musical model, if it was conceptual, you know what I mean?
It is. I think it is conceptual.
Yeah. I've had a hard time. I've gotten better at that. I hope to get better at that.
And you talk about
the songwriting process.
Yeah, and you talk about songwriting. You talk about the melancholy. You just brought it up. That's a perfect word for it. And that kind of... rootless melancholy is absolutely in your songs, and you get that sense. Mm-hmm. And let's talk a little about your songwriting process. Where are you pulling the song? Are you a person who sits down and just writes naturally? Things come to you, or do you? How much is craft? How much is inspiration? You know? Do you know? Understand what I mean?
Yeah, I do. It's a fascinating subject to me, because there's some of it's a little bit of everything. I can kind of feel when there might be some songs coming on, but it's mainly that they're always kind of sitting there. Not to get too cliche about, you know, keep your antenna up and, you know, Hey Jude will come to you or something like that. But to put those antenna up, it requires a certain peace of mind. To where I'm open to just kind of melodies, and it's not that I'm trying to pull in songs. It's that I'm in a mental place to where I'm
I'm kind of mindlessly humming to myself. And so I'll get a lot of melody ideas just from taking walks or mowing the yard or something like that.
Hmm.
Things will kind of pop into my head, and I'll stick them. I usually don't do a more rigid songwriting thing until I have nine times out of ten, I'll have a pretty decent melody and a lot of a song finished to where I then need to put lyrics to it.
Right. So in other words, things are almost incidental in your life, that when you're relaxed doing some mundane thing, essentially, you open up.
Yeah. I don't try to force it until I have a decent song that could use some whatever kind of lyrics I can throw together for them. I kind of see this collaborating with myself a little bit, in that I keep a lot of, the only notes I keep are usually lyrical notes of phrases here and there, and then I'll go back if I need a part for a song. I'll go back and see what I've written before and see if any of that in any way has anything to do with the kernel of whatever mm-hmm. song I'm on. And in that way, it turns into a collaboration, to where I'm going back to mind space I was in, that this thing just kind of popped in my head.
Hmm.
To where you, and I've always kind of wanted to collaborate with someone else like that, to get that kind of objective songwriting, to where it takes a song like A Day in the Life, to where you got the woke up, got out of bed part. Doesn't seem to have anything to do with the rest of the song, but the song is so much better with it, because it adds
absolutely
that kind of dimension.
Yeah.
So I'll throw in old notes of things, and like, you know what, I'm just going to say this makes sense. And then sometimes it does Four Leaf Clover was that kind of a song. There's a lot of notes I had. It's like, this is a great song.
It is a great song.
It's just kind of like, it's the idea of just like cutting up a bunch of words out of a book and scattering out on the street with a story. I always thought it'd be fun to write a song from Fortune Cookie Fortunes and just throw them out and see what you end up with.
The cut and paste method, right? Yeah.
Mindlessly, something will happen.
And that's exactly correct. You know, I was just, I'm actually in the midst right now of reading a book about David Lynch, filmmaker. And mm-hmm. And he's talking about, and everyone's amazed by this, but it's just how he operates, is that, you know, he'll have a script, he'll do stuff, and he'll come in and do it, and then he'll just be inspired by some kind of bird that flew by, and all of a sudden that bird has to be in the movie. So,
yeah,
it's that kind of thing. It's the inspiration very much of the moment, and all of a sudden it all makes sense, you know? So
yeah, you know, I think that's what, for me, makes it hard to be like a classic storyteller kind of a writer for me, like a, you know, like a Bruce Springsteen type that has a beginning, middle, and an end. This happened, right, and this happened, and then something profound happens. Is that I tend to take a lot bigger view of songs, and just, I guess, just life in general, which kind of can turn you into a Mr. Magoo. But I would rather look at the entire movie as opposed to the individual scenes, and just it's kind of impressionistic that way, I think.
Hmm. Yeah, and that's very much the kind of palette you lay out in your songs. So yeah, that was very well expressed. So let's talk a little about your we talked about your very early beginnings coming up as a musician, being in a household of musicians where music was respected, and playing music was respected and not put down and encouraged. Tell us a little about your early experiences with, let's say, playing music in public.
I was in school chorus really early on, and that's where I learned to sight read, and I always had a fairly deep voice even then, so I don't know if I was ever a tenor in that situation, but I learned the value of parts and kind of musical patience. If you're in a group like that, sometimes the bass parts are really sparse. And I my choral teacher, Mr. Whittington, he would always say, "There's no boring parts, just boring musicians." And I always loved that, and it reminded me of being like the baritone sax player in a soul band. Like, he plays the least and has the best part, you know. So I learned a lot about arrangement being in chorus. I like arranging as much as anything, and you learn a lot from the bass part. So that was probably my first time. It was the first time I ever sang in public. We did a lot of competition choir. We went to Disneyland and stuff like that. And then I was writing music fairly early on because my mom wrote, so it didn't seem like a weird thing.
Right.
Wrote a song. I was just thinking about this. I was maybe 9 or 10, called Black Smoke. It's like this kind of Sabbath-y kind of thing about pollution.
Okay. That's great. Yeah. That's great. You were 9 or 10 writing a protest song.
Kind of. You know, well, there was a lot of Bob Dylan going on in my house.
That's great.
A lot of Dylan. Yeah, I looking back on it, I mean, I just thought it was incredibly cheesy growing up, but I was just thinking about it now, like, you know what, that's fine. That's fine.
Of course it's fine. And listen, Dylan's still doing some great work out there, so yeah, absolutely.
Oh, no, he can do no wrong as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, me too. It's a great thing. All right, so what about like the first times you were in bands and stuff like that? Did you go that route, or did you do a solo thing first, or what happened?
I always wanted to be in bands. Let's see, the first kind of, I had a thing in high school called the Blue Meanies. And it was me and the only other people in middle school. It might have even been middle school or high school that listened to the Rolling Stones and the Beatles. And, I mean, it's called the Blue Meanies.
Right,
and so we played like the most obvious song, like Satisfaction and, I don't have stuff like that. So that we didn't really do anything with that. But then it went on and did some kind of punk rock kind of bands, and a lot of I did a kind of a meter, a thing based off of Meters, but it was a lot heavier, called the Blind Pigs for a while.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it was fun. You never really, you know, caring about doing anything with it, but and then from there, and then I just kept playing. I was gonna use my degree to go into law or history or theology or something, but I was just not very good at anything else. I'm not great at music, but I'm better at music than anything else.
Well, I think you are pretty great at music myself, but yeah, you're welcome. Okay. So you floated about, and so now in this stage of your career with Drunken Prayer, and what are you envisioning here? Because you're kind of taking on a bit of an even though it's a full musical band format kind of a thing, it's you're kind of taking on an alter ego to a certain degree, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I do. It just evolved that way. They, when I first moved to Portland, Oregon, the only gigs I could get were usually Sunday afternoon kind of thing that nobody else wanted. And there was kind of a biker bar around the corner from where I live, the Queen of Hearts.
And what a great name for a bar.
It was fantastic. The people who ran it used to own the Palomino in Los Angeles, kind of famous.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Country bar there. And so we're going to play Sundays. I know a whole ton of old gospel songs. Let's just play like Just a Closer Walk with Thee in kind of a rock band format. And people liked it, and I had fun doing it, and so the name Drunken Prayer kind of fit. And from there, it just kind of, I kind of started enjoying the veil of having that between me and whatever the project is. It kind of makes it easier if it's not under my name somehow, even though I'm not trying not to hide it or anything. I don't know why people choose project names over their own name. A lot of it's practical. It's like, who's going to go see Morgan Gear over something called Drunken Prayer?
Right, right. But it's
also level. It looks better on a calendar.
it's also a freeing thing, though, right? It's kind of frees you up.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, but kind of, I'm not sure because I feel like if I had just gone by my own name, it might have even been if anyone paid any since this new record's coming out and I've got a new website that's going to be going up tomorrow. I've been going through old quotes and whatnot, and it's kind of like peeling off old scars, old band-aids. It's like, oh man, not all these reviews were that great, and I don't necessarily disagree. So I don't know if I had gone by my own name, if it wouldn't have even been more kind of a stray would be one way to put it. I kind of like having no genre, but at a certain point, I also don't want to just be hiding behind my art. And I like trying to take big swings at things, if that makes any sense.
It does make sense.
And like put a cohesive record. I just found myself with a bunch of catchy songs, honestly, this time. And, then this is how I'm going to treat it. It's going to be an album full of catchy songs, and I'm not going to really mess with it by putting a whole bunch of players on it or any kind of clever studio trick. I'm going to go to the best mixer I know in Mitch Easter, who happens to just live down the road.
That was going to be my next question about Mitch. Yeah. And what a pleasure working with him, right?
Oh yeah, incredible! It was between him and one of the posts was in Sparkle Horse, who also lives nearby.
I would say that's those are some good choices.
Not bad, but Mitch, this was a guitar based kind of album. There's not a whole lot of synth and stuff like that. So it made a lot of sense, and also the guy who was recording it, Brian Landrum here in Asheville, who plays also with Tyler Ramsey. He's an incredible engineer, and he's worked with both of these guys before. He worked with Mitch, and he knew how to deliver the files, and he knew how to kind of get everything going pretty fast. So it's really serendipitous, and so having this album full of fairly catchy songs, it's like, well, let's just go ahead and roll the dice and actually put a little more effort into this and treat it like just a big record.
and it is a big record, and it's really amazing. And the Mitch Easter connection was going to be one of my questions coming up, but I mean that connection, he seems to be really in tune with what you're trying to bring out. So
you'd have to ask him. it went back and forth between, like, I just, from biting my tongue the whole time, and just is like, screw it. I'm just gonna ask him a bunch of, like, you were here when this happened. What was that like? He's seen all the best shows. I mean, not even the stuff he wasn't personally involved in. He's been a high witness to rock and roll.
Yeah, of course.
He saw Humble Pie in the '60s, yeah. And that alone we talked about for a half an hour. I had to keep reminding myself that I was paying for this conversation.
Well, you're like, right. You were using some fanboy time, and that was good. So it's all
you know. Yes, I'm fine with that.
That's funny. Yeah, but. The combination, and let's talk about some of the people who are on the album, because you do have other people on this record.
Okay.
So,
let's talk about it. It's Brian Landrum, who is engineering the thing. He also plays drums and piano on this, and a little bit of organ, too. And then Eric Hubner plays bass. They're both Asheville, North Carolina guys. Like I said, Brian also plays with Tyler Ramsey, and he used to play with Floating Action. And Eric plays. Yeah. There's top notch guy. That's really lucky to be playing with him on this. And they they played the songs exactly what I was hoping they would. really straightforward and almost kind of a not exactly a crazy horse approach, but pretty close to that. You know, not a lot of frills, and it doesn't have to be big. But they were able to knock it out of the park really, really fast. And we recorded in a one room studio, so there's a lot of bleed, and you have to be confident playing with headphones on and little things like that. And these guys are really, really good at that.
Yeah, it's a very natural sound. It sounds like the band is all in the room at the same time. And I know there's probably some things happening, but achieving that effect is really not as easy as a lot of people think.
It's not. And that's one of the amazing things about making this record, that it wasn't hard this time to do. It was really straightforward. A lot of that's attributed to Brian and Eric being really comfortable with that. And so there's the only overdubbing on it was just kind of meat and potatoes kind of thing. There's no really grand production on this, which I wish and I hope all my records could have that kind of feel, because I'm usually going for my aesthetic is still, no matter what the songs are, even if they have, like, I don't know, like an Elliott Smith bent to them or something, I don't want them to sound kind of like a Hound Dog Taylor record.
Yeah.
Because I just love to hear people in a room playing. I like mistakes, you know. I like to feel the humanity in it, and what I can envision that where I'm sitting in the room while they're playing. When I listen to a Hound Dog Taylor record, I know exactly where I'm sitting. I know how dark it is in there.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
I do.
It's a sense of place when you, whether you've been there or not, for real. And records like that really turn me on.
That's extremely well put. And you are accomplishing that on this record. This is like the listener's in the room, and you're in the out of the way bar that you know, there's maybe 20 people in, not that you want that, but it's got that feel.
Yeah.
But it's got that feel to it.
Yeah.
That it's a very intimate quality. And
that goes back to what we were saying about the trying to stay insulated.
Right.
That's not necessarily the kind of music I listen to at all. I mean, that only comes up every once in a while. And so it's easy to, when I'm on my own recording, like at my desk or something, to just go down rabbit holes and just explore different styles and ways of production that are just interesting to me. But not all that necessarily needs to be released.
No, right. Well, a lot of it is just you're doing artistic exploration. That's that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Craftsmanship exploration too, right.
Yeah, well, I think that's where the craftsmanship comes in, is where you give yourself some boundaries.
Right.
I think art is more for reaching for things, and craftsmanship is going for perfection, or at least going for an ideal. And I've been getting more into that idea lately, and there's one reason probably this record sounds more focused than the rest of them is that I was trying to go for one sound for the entire record, as opposed to treating it song by song. And just going with whatever the song is asking for.
Right, which you have done in the past. It's been, it's like different production almost on different songs, yeah. Whereas on this, it sounds like a very cohesive, it's an album.
That's good. I'm glad you think so, because I'm not objective about any of this.
You can't be, you're too close, I get it.
Yeah, it was nice to talk to someone who sounds like they know what they're talking about.
Well, I've been listening. Listen, I'm not the one who knows what I'm talking about. I'm the one that understands a bit what you're talking about. So that's the thing.
And what you're
playing. You know what I mean? I hear it. So I'm just listening to it. But, I mean, that's how it does sound. It sounds like a cohesive statement throughout. That's what I'm telling you. When I take the train out here to Stony Brook, and I have this, I don't just listen to a song on this record. I listen to the record. You know, and it's a very cohesive statement. It's great. It's a great sound. It's a great thing that you get sucked into. It's a beautiful record.
Well, I'm glad that other people. It's easy to get in your own bubble. It's nice to hear that people are may be listening to the record from beginning to end in a sequence, because that's how I hear it. And more people are listening to just singles, or going back into kind of a pre-album world where you just one single after the next, to where, for me, it might be confusing if you're only listening to one song at a time. It's like, what is this all about?
Right.
It's kind of like the blind man and the elephant.
Right.
You know, which, depending on what you grab a hold of, it could be a tree or a snake.
Right. And it's also like just seeing a corner of a great painting, you know, where you only see the little the little corner, and there's just a few lines. It's like, what the hell is this thing?
Yeah, yeah.
But when you see the whole picture, it's a whole different game.
I'm glad you see it that way as well.
It's a beautiful record. So let's talk about the website. Your new website, first of all, is opening tomorrow, right?
Right. I mean, that's gonna be up sometime in the morning. give me time to get up.
By tomorrow night.
I don't know what happens.
By tomorrow night, it should be
11:30. Sure,
who cares? So listen, we're not asking for people to set their alarms here. We're just having them.
Right. Yeah, I'm having a website release party tomorrow.
So what is the website?
It's drunkenprayer.com.
Okay, nice and easy.
My friend Kara Brown is redoing it for me, and I'm doing this whole record all by myself, and I'm reminded how much work a record label actually does.
Oh, that's so, that's right.
Thank you to my friends at Fluff and Gravy and the Deer Lodge. You guys do a lot. This one I'm doing almost all of it by myself. I'm mailing them out from the house, and so if you order a record from the website, I'll get an email. there's a lot going on. I'm currently trying to book a 3-month-long tour across country.
Well, we're going to get to that too in a second. But if people want to order the record, they can do it through your website, right?
Yes, just go to drunkenprayer.com.
Is there a physical product?
Yeah, there's the CD. Mm-hmm. There's translucent orange vinyl.
Oh,
and
wow.
Then the classic black, classic black vinyl too.
great vinyl. Hey, listen, I still buy vinyl. I love vinyl. It's a thing, and that we played a bunch tonight, as a matter of fact. But yeah, vinyl is the the way to go.
It's, I was going to say both of them come with downloads too. So anyway, I always appreciate that when people throw that in there. But I just did a essay for the Vinyl District on my.
Okay.
My relationship with vinyl. It goes back to that music and the way I process it. Being I like to hear human beings doing it, some mistakes and pops and warps and getting caught in grooves and that kind of thing. I don't listen to vinyl because I have a really terrible sound system, so I wouldn't know the difference one way or the other. I'm not necessarily an audiophile in that manner.
You know why you have a terrible sound system? Because you're a musician. That's why. And all of us who are musicians have terrible sound systems.
It's funny. Yeah, that's right. I don't think I know any musicians with a booming stereo.
That's right. We may have some microphones somewhere, but we don't have a good sound systems.
Oh, yeah. I've got some great equipment. Just really terrible stereo.
All right, so people can get stuff right from your website, drunkenprayer.com, but people can also get it digitally, obviously, via the regular streaming services, right?
Yeah, starting Friday, it'll be on Amazon, iTunes,
all the above, Google
Music, all the above. And there's a few record stores who are already carrying it, mainly in the places where I live.
Sure, no,
like
of course.
Asheville and Portland. Music Millennium in Portland, and then Harvest Records in Asheville, and anywhere else can order it worldwide.
Well, that is super cool.
You can order it from my website right now.
That's fantastic. So drunkenprayer.com. You got to check out Morgan Gear there. And now let's talk about the New York City gigs. What's coming up?
Let's see. I'm going to it's in May. I'm going to it's kind of around this appearance on WFMU.
Sure.
In Jersey.
Yeah, we know.
Great radio station.
Big fans. Yep.
Yeah, I got into them through the Best Show.
Yeah, sure.
Really love those guys.
Yep.
So I'll be going up there May, 16th. Let's see if I can pull that up right quick. Yeah, I'll be at I'm going to be in Baltimore on and then going to the Treehouse in New York and Pianos and Monstercade. Back in Winston-Salem after that.
All right, so in New York City, you're going to be at the Treehouse and Pianos, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to be at,
Do you have
the
those dates?
On Sunday the 19th, the
May
Treehouse,
19th. 2A.
Uh-huh. I'm sorry, May 19th, and right. Then the Pianos on May 20th.
Fantastic. So we'll be promoting the hell out of that, as I just said before, in the cleanest way possible. And I'll probably be at the piano show myself. And absolutely look forward to seeing this. Now, you're coming down. Are you playing with a full band?
Yeah, I'm bringing the whole band.
That's great.
We're going to be doing FMU the morning of before we play Pianos on the 20th. So it'll
Fantastic.
Be a four-piece. Members of the Raining Sound as the rhythm section, and Jason Krekel on fiddle and second guitar. So
wow,
it's a good group we got.
That's exciting. That's
yeah.
great.
Yeah, it's good.
And you're going to be doing stuff not only from the new thing, but also from previous?
Yeah, I'll probably do about half and half.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's beautiful. And I bet you, how's your feeling about, because obviously production attitudes were a little different for you on different releases, but how's your feeling about doing the older stuff? Are you comfortable with all that? Or are you, you know what I mean? In other words,
For the most part, I like to kind of rewrite songs. I can't stop fiddling with stuff because I usually just end up for a recorded version just choose a version I like. So if you go back, you'll see that I've got two or three versions of a handful of songs out there
right
now just because I can't. Why not?
You know? That's right.
So I don't mind kind of looking at things again when I'm able to. I travel a lot, so I've got different groups in different parts of the country. But when I'm able to play with one group for more than a string of shows, I like to go and revisit older songs. Also, because I play with a lot of different people, I like to play different people's strengths, kind of. So if it feels like a heavier band, I can go back and play some of the heavier songs I've done. If it's like right now, I've got a fun kind of trio that's a bowed bass and violin, and then me on electric guitar, which adds a whole other aspect to the
yeah.
To
you
the
can
sound.
Take different approaches. So, it's a different musical setup. Yeah, that's great.
It keeps it fresh. It's a way of doing it long term without getting sick of it too.
It's fantastic. All right, so we've been talking with Morgan Gear of Drunken Prayer. Right here on WUSB Stony Brook on Finn's Revolution. This interview, of course, will be up on the podcast this weekend, and Morgan will have a copy of that so he can post it for fans and listeners and all those things. And you want to check out Morgan Gear's website, drunkenprayer.com, for all kinds of information about gigs and releases and a whole bunch of stuff just redone and launching tomorrow about 11:36 in the morning. And you get vinyl copies of the brand new Drunken Prayer album there too. And we're going to be checking out Drunken Prayer on May 16th at the Treehouse, May 19th at the Treehouse, and May 20th at Pianos in NYC. Morgan, thank you so much for joining
thank
us
you.
On Finn's Revolution.
It's been a pleasure.
And you've done a great, great job on this record and all your work, and it just gets better. And I greatly appreciate you spending some time with us, my friend.
It's a pleasure. Anytime.
We'll talk to you soon. Now we're going to hear Four Leaf Clover from Drunken Prayer. Morgan, take care.